It's 4:37 downtown here on a Tuesday show, last day of June, live at Seasons Main Street in Bangor and our Quality Jewelers broadcast studios. Downtown is presented every afternoon by Hollywood Casino, Hotel, and Raceway, 500 Main Street in downtown Bangor. Here on The Pulse, WZON, WZONThePulse.com, all around the world, and in high definition on WKIT HD3 100.3. Our next guest on Downtown chronicled some of the best and biggest albums of the 1970s with his last book, The Vinyl Dialogues, and he is back again with Volume 2 entitled Dropping the Needle. And we're awfully excited to talk music back on Downtown with our friend Michael Morsch. Mike, how are you this afternoon?
Hi, Rich. Great lead-in music there. Thanks.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Now, I understand you're dealing with some rough weather, though, out in Philadelphia.
Yeah, we just had a storm move through. I hope you can hear me okay, but the sun looks like it's coming out now, so maybe we're past the worst of it.
All right, Debbie. Well, if anything happens, we're thinking of you, and just stay low.
Thank you.
Keep low down there. Before we talk about the book, I want to talk about a concert experience that ties into it. You got to see one of your favorites and one of my favorites as well last night with Brian Wilson in concert. How was that?
Oh, fabulous. I've seen him before, but... Brian's music and the music of the Beach Boys hold a highly personal and special place in my life, and it's always an emotional experience for me to go and hear him perform. And you know what? He's got a great band, and there's a lot of buzz about Brian right now because of the film that's out right now, Love and Mercy, about his life. So it was a wonderful time. I had my daughter with me, and we saw a great show.
Well, and not only that, but Brian's a part of the book as well. One of the albums that you talk about is Sunflower, a terrific album from 1970, kind of an overlooked album. Now, you've talked to Brian before, but this time you went a different route in looking at that album.
Yeah, that kind of happened, I won't say by accident. I had a little bit of an idea what I wanted to do. I wanted to include a Beach Boys album, and the most difficult thing about that is finding an album that maybe there hasn't been a whole lot written about in detail, and then finding one of the Beach Boys, getting access to one of the Beach Boys to talk to. So we went with Bruce Johnston this time, and that kind of, oddly enough, Rich, that kind of happened by accident. We had been a guest of Bruce's, my daughter and I had been a guest of Bruce's at a Beach Boys concert in Atlantic City. And after the show, we got to go back and chat with him a little bit. And I had a copy of Sunflower, a copy of the album with me. And I said, I asked him to sign it for me. And as he was signing, he said, "This is the best album we ever made," which kind of surprised me a little bit.
Mm.
But I immediately latched on to him. I said, "Would you be willing to talk about it in detail?" He said, "Yeah, give me a call." And so that's how that came about, and Bruce was very forthcoming. It's a really interesting chapter. I learned a lot. As big a Beach Boys fan as I am, I learned a lot that I didn't know about the group at that time.
Very good. So many wonderful albums and terrific people you talked about. We were talking online the other day about the great album from 1972, Billy Joe Thomas. And you not only talked to B.J. Thomas, but one of the key backup singers on the album, Darlene Love.
Right, and... you know, for the longest time, and there's still some question amongst the general public, one of BJ's best songs of his career is on that album called Rock and Roll Lullaby, which I know you're familiar with. It's just a great song. I've described it from my own personal viewpoint as about a perfect of a song that can be made. And, of course, the attraction to me was the background vocals on Rock and Roll Lullaby, which for a number of years people thought were actually the Beach Boys. And certainly I asked DJ that right out of the chute about, is that the Beach Boys singing background vocals? And he said no, and he began, you know, to relate the story of how it was actually supposed to be the Beach Boys, but they could never come to an agreement. And then... he details who it actually is, and the Blossoms were part of the background vocals on Rock and Roll Lullaby.
And also a great guitar part on the song by Duane Eddy.
Duane Eddy. And in fact, One of the other background singers was a guy by the name of David Somerville, who was lead singer for the Diamonds, the 1950s group, the Diamonds.
The guys who did Little Darlin', right?
Yeah, Little Darlin'.
We're talking with Michael Morris. His new book is The Vinyl Dialogues, Volume 2, Dropping the Needle, looking at some terrific albums. And what I loved about the first book, and what looks great about this one, is you hit a lot of different genres, too, including country music. And you talked with a guy I had the pleasure of interviewing many years ago when I was working in country radio, Don Reed of the Statler Brothers.
I can't say enough good things about Don Reed. I grew up with country music in Central Illinois as a kid. My folks listened to a lot of country music. My folks actually listened to a lot of different genres of music, which is why I have the experience that I have with a number of different genres. But Don Reed is a true gentleman, and he was actually in the first Vinyl Dialogues, and I was so impressed with the way he handled himself that I just thought, you know what, I want to talk to this guy again about a different album. And he agreed. And it's to the point now where, believe it or not, Rich, we have a telephone and an email relationship, and he's invited me down to have lunch with him down in Stanton, Virginia, which is about a five-hour drive for me. And I'm thinking about toying with the idea of just driving down and having lunch with the guy one day.
They were great guys. He and his brother, Harold, a wonderful bunch of guys that I had a chance to work with on a concert many, many years ago. And also, I'm curious to read about Guyon Rallna. Everybody remembers from the old Lawrence Welk show. And you talked with both Guyon Rallna, I think.
I did. And that's actually an offshoot from the first book. If you recall the first book, there was a chapter in there by two artists named Brewer and Shipley.
Yeah, but talking about One Took Over the Line and one of the great YouTube videos of all time.
It is. And at the time, there was two singers on the Lawrence Welk show in the early 70s, Gail Farrell and Dick Dale. And they actually sang One Took Over the Line on the Lawrence Welk show in the early 70s. And it appeared, if you can go to YouTube and actually see the video, it appeared that they did not realize, nor did Lawrence Welk realize, that it was a song about drugs. Lawrence actually calls it a spiritual song. And so what I wanted to do after the first book was try and track down those singers that sang that and include, you know, possibly an explanation in the second book. I did track down Gail Farrell. She lives in California. And I all I wanted to know was, did you know you were, you know, singing about a drug song? And we talked for an hour. And you know what, Rich? She wouldn't tell me what she knew. And she had a very good reason for not telling me. She has written herself a one-woman play. And apparently the story that she will reveal in this play, part of it is what she knew and when she knew it about that particular song. But during the course of that conversation, she's the one that suggested maybe I should talk to Guyon Rallna, and I was more than happy to do that. She had contact information for both of them. She actually reached out to them prior to me calling. They both said they would be happy to talk to me. And you know what? Guy told a wonderfully fabulous story about an opportunity to join the Jordanaires to back Elvis in the late 60s, early 70s, and he actually turned that down to go to the Welk show.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
Well, so
and
many.
There's a couple other little gems in that chapter that I don't want to give away, but there's actually a Godfather, the film The Godfather. There's a Godfather connection the guy in Rallna chapter.
I can't wait to read it. Well, so many terrific people that you've talked to. Jim Gold of Gallery, the guys who did Nice to Be With You. Gino Vannelli and his hair. And, of course, you couldn't do a book without talking to your Philly guys. And John Oates talked with you about Along the Red Ledge.
Yeah. I actually had, after the first book, I have a pretty heavy following of Fallen Oates fans, so I kind of crowdsourced the idea, hey, if I'm doing a second book here, which album would you like to read about? And believe it or not, the social networking crowd picked Along the Red Ledge for me. So that's the one I pursued with John. And John Oates is one of the great interviews of all times. He's a true storyteller, and his memory is impeccable about what happened, you know, 35, 40 years ago. So that was it's always an interesting conversation with John Oates. He's another true gentleman and a huge talent that probably doesn't get as much credit as he deserves in that regard.
Mike, I get the sense that these guys are all very willing to go back and talk about some of these albums, especially since some of the albums that you write about are not the ones that were the biggest sellers. And I look at some that maybe people don't know, but should go give a listen to, and a couple of them stand out, especially Luke Christie's Paint America Love from 1971 that didn't sell much at all, but was a terrific album.
It was a terrific album, and it was one that didn't sell enough. And he told me in the interview that to this day he's still disappointed that album didn't gain more traction, sell more records, things like that. It was his coming of age album from the high falsetto era of the '60s, advancing into the '70s. That's a very interesting chapter as well, and Lou was very forthcoming about that. I'm very fortunate in that if I pick the right album, that the artist either doesn't get a chance to talk about much anymore, or was an important part of that artist's career, they're more than happy to share those stories, and I'm very much appreciative of that.
Don Felder of the Eagles, who we've had on the show, Dewey Bunnell of America, you mentioned Bruce Johnston, Rich Williams of Kansas, Loverboys, Mike Reno, a couple of guys from Sly and the Family Stone as well. I can't wait. What's the publication date on the Vinyl Dialogues Volume 2, Dropping the Needle?
Well, we're looking right around August 1st, so another month here. It's with the final editors, final edit now. I do want to mention, though, Rich, that the electronic version of the first book did very well, and so what we've decided to do that if you want to get a little bit of a preview of what's going to go on in the volume two, you can purchase the online version. It's very, very reasonably priced at Amazon.com or at Barnes and Noble, and with that e-book purchase, you can actually get a free download of a complete chapter that will appear in Volume 2. And the chapter we're offering up to the readers is Hearts of Stone by Southside Johnny and the Asbury Jukes.
Wow, I love it. I can't wait to read it. The first one was a great ride, and I know this one is going to be just as good. Mike Morris, the author of the Vinyl Dialogues, Volume 2, Dropping the Needle. Mike, thanks as always for visiting with us. Good luck with the book, and we look forward to talking with you again.
Thanks for having me, Rich. I appreciate it.
It is 10 minutes to go before the top of the hour here on Downtown.